Let us now start with the very important program which we have before us, and it's looking into near-death experiences. Now, there's one person who was very early in the field, and when he did his research study, it was enormously comprehensive. And he has, in fact, led the field since then. When he retired, he led the field outside near-death experiences into consciousness. Now, we first met Pim van Lommel in 1988. It was an IONS talk, and it was in Oxford. And Pim came to Oxford and told us about the study which he was doing. It was a very exciting study. He was going to have cards on the ceiling. He was going to do it in several hospitals, and he was going to get as many patients as he could. But remember, this is 1988, and remember that the first film which came out, apart from the Everyman film, which was, I think, 1982, was 1987, when I did Glimpses of Death with David. And it was really the first time that near-death experiences were put on the map in the UK. And we got 2,000 letters. Do you remember letters? You have a pen and you write. We got 2,000 of those things. And they all had to be opened and sorted, very unlike modern communication. And the other thing is that the sample was highly biased. Who writes letters? Now, is it that women are much more spiritual, so that's why we got it, or do women write more letters than men? Because 75% of the letters were from women. So it was a great time, and we had the excitement of seeing Pim and hearing about the work he was going to do. Well, of course, Pim worked away at his study, and it finally came to fruition. And Pim has achieved something which very few of us in the medical profession can do, and that is to get published by The Lancet. Everybody would love to have Pim in their cardiology unit. He's published in The Lancet. So when he finally retired, he decided that he would go on to talk about consciousness, and as you can see, his title is Consciousness Beyond Life, which is really the logical follow-up of the near-death experience, because it asks the question, in fact, are the experiences in some sense veridical that those who have near-death experiences have? So, Pim, it is a really great pleasure to have you here at the network. The world's leading authority? Leading authority? Yes, definitely. The world's leading authority on near-death experiences. And there is nobody better in the world to lead us on consciousness beyond life, the near-death experience, and the nature of reality. And I'm looking forward to it. Pim van Lommel.
Thank you so much for your kind work, Peter. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased that I get the opportunity to discuss here today my concept of non-local consciousness based on scientific research on survivors of cardiac arrest. A near-death experience, or an NDE, or an experience of enhanced consciousness during a period of apparent coma, still gives rise to many unbelieving and critical questions, especially by physicians and neuroscientists. But as already one century ago, William James has said, to study the abnormal is the best way of understanding the normal. How can it scientifically be explained that people can have clear memories from a period of obvious unconsciousness? Or how is it possible that permanent life changes occur after cardiac arrest of only 2 minutes. An NDE is an unforgettable confrontation with the unlimited dimensions in our consciousness. As long as one not has experienced an NDE himself, it seems impossible to really understand the impact and the life-changing after effects of this overwhelming experience. The existing worldview has radically changed. Quote, "It felt as if I had become another person but with the same identity." Or another quote, "You can be physically dead, but your mind lives on. Only one thing matters, your attitude toward life and toward other people. I accept life as it is, and I am no longer afraid of death." I will not talk only about changes in consciousness during and after an NDE, but above all, I want to discuss my ideas about the relationship between consciousness and the brain. Important questions for me were, how is consciousness related to the integrity of brain function? Is it possible to gain insight in this relationship? And is there a biological basis of consciousness anyway? We can distinguish between both temporary and timeless aspects of consciousness. This prompts the following question: is it possible to speak of a beginning of our consciousness, and will our consciousness ever end? I realize that my approach will be new or unexpected for most neuroscientists, and that my conclusions will not always be in conformity with the currently widely accepted materialistic paradigm in Western science. In my recently released book, Consciousness Beyond Life, which is here the English title, and I have there the German, Spanish, and French titles as well with me, I write into many more details about my ideas about non-local consciousness than I can explain here today in my lecture. But I also realize that many aspects of consciousness are still a great mystery. How started my interest in NDE? In 1969, during my rotating internship, a patient was successfully resuscitated in the coronary care unit by electrical defibrillation. In those days, this was an all new and exciting for us. We mostly do not realize anymore that until 1967, only 45 years ago, all patients with cardiac arrest died because of modern resuscitation techniques like defibrillation and external chest compressions were not yet available, only 45 years ago. But this patient regained consciousness after a period of unconsciousness of about 4 minutes, and we as resuscitation team were of course very happy. But the patient seemed to be very, very disappointed. He told me about going through a tunnel, seeing a light, beautiful landscape, and hearing beautiful music. I have never forgotten this event, but I did not do anything with it. And in that time, in 69, I did not know that in human history, the same experiences have been told in many cultures, in many religions, and in all times, as is shown in this painting from Hieronymus Bosch, the Dutch painter, showing diseased people escorted through a tunnel to the light. And only years later, in 1975, Raymond Moody first described these so-called near-death experiences. And only in 1986, I read about these experiences in the book by George Ritchie entitled Return from Tomorrow, which relates what he experienced during a period of clinical death of 9 minutes duration in 1943 during his medical study. And after reading this book, I started to interview my patients who had survived a cardiac arrest. And to my great surprise, within 2 years, 12 patients out of 50 survivors of cardiac arrest in the past told me about their NDE. For me, it all started with scientific curiosity, because according to our current medical concepts, it is not possible to experience consciousness during a cardiac arrest when circulation and breathing have ceased. I grew up in an academic environment in which I had been taught that there is a reductionist and materialistic explanation for everything, that it was obvious that consciousness was the product of a functioning brain. And up until that point, I have always accepted this as an indisputable truth. But now the phenomenon of near-death experiences raises a number of fundamental questions. An NDE is a special state of consciousness that occurs during an imminent or actual period of physical, psychological, or emotional death. But how and why does an NDE occur? How does the content of an NDE come about? Why does a person's life change so radically after an NDE? I was unable to accept most of the answers to these questions because they seemed incomplete, incorrect, or unfounded. But first, what is an NDE? Some people who have survived a cardiac arrest, a life-threatening crisis, report an extraordinary conscious experience. And an NDE can be defined as the reported memory of a range of impressions during a special state of consciousness, including a number of universal elements like an out-of-body experience, pleasant feelings, seeing a tunnel, a light, deceased relatives, a life review of the conscious return back into the body. And many circumstances are described during which NDE are reported, such as cardiac arrest, clinical death, shock after loss of blood, childbirth, coma following traumatic brain injury or stroke, near drowning, children, or asphyxia, but also in serious diseases not immediately life-threatening, during depression, isolation, or meditation, or without any obvious reason. Similar experiences to near-death ones can occur during the terminal phase of illness and are called deathbed visions or end-of-life experiences. So apparently, you don't always need a non-functioning brain to report an NDE. The NDE is transformational, always causing enhanced intuitive sensibility, profound changes in life insight, and the loss of the fear of death. And near-death experiences occur with increasing frequency because of the improved survival rates resulting from modern techniques of resuscitation. The content of an NDE and the effects on patients seem similar worldwide across all cultures and all times. However, the subjective nature and absence of a frame of reference for these experiences lead to individual, cultural, and religious factors determining the vocabulary used to describe and interpret these experiences. Children and adults, Christians and atheists, Muslims and Buddhists, they all use different words from their own religion, culture, and tradition. But in fact, it is an ineffable experience. And according to a recent at random poll in Germany and USA, about 4% of the total population in the Western world should have experienced an NDE. So more than 9 million people in the USA, about 2.5 million people in the UK, and about 20 million people in Europe must have had an NDE. Now, why do we physicians hardly ever hear a patient tell about his NDE? Patients are so reluctant to share their experience with others by all the negative responses they get. You have to be open about an NDE to hear about an NDE, and patients must feel that you trust them, that you can listen without any comment or prejudice. But for most physicians, the NDE is still an incomprehensible and unknown phenomenon. Once a conference was held about NDE in a university hospital with more than 300 people in attendance. And at the end of the conference, after several lectures about NDE, a man stood up and said, I'm a cardiologist for more than 25 years, and have never heard such absurd stories. This is total nonsense. I don't believe one word of it. And then another man stood up and said, I am one of your patients. I have had a near-death experience during cardiac arrest, and you would be the last one I would ever tell. They know, they feel exactly that these kind of doctors are not open to listen. They know it. And until recently, there was no prospective and scientifically designed study to explain the cause and content of an NDE. All studies have been retrospective and very selective with respect to patients. Based on these incomplete retrospective studies, some believed that the experience could be caused by physiological changes in the brain, like lack of oxygen, cerebral anoxia. Other theories encompass the physiological reaction to approaching, psychological reaction to approaching death, hallucinations, dreams, side effects of drugs, or just false memories. So in 1988, we started a prospective study of 344 consecutive patients of cardiac arrest in 10 Dutch hospitals, with the aim to investigate the frequency, the cause, and the content of an NDE. And this cartoon was published in a Dutch national newspaper when our study was published in The Lancet in December 2001. We wanted to know if there could be a physiological, pharmacological, psychological, or demographic explanation why people experience enhanced consciousness during a period of cardiac arrest. We did a short, standardized interview with sufficiently recovered patients within a few days after resuscitation and asked whether they could remember the period of unconsciousness and what they recalled. We additionally performed a longitudinal study with taped interviews of all late survivors with NDE 2 and 8 years following the cardiac arrest, along with a matched control group of survivors of cardiac arrest who did not report an NDE. And we studied patients who survived the cardiac arrest because this is a well-described, life-threatening medical situation, which is also called clinical death. The definition of clinical death was used for a period of unconsciousness caused by lack of oxygen or anoxia of the brain due to the arrest of circulation and breathing that happens during cardiac arrest in patients with an acute myocardial infarction. And these patients will ultimately die from irreversible damage to the brain if cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, is not initiated within 5 to 10 minutes. It is the closest model of the process of dying. And in cases where memories were reported, we coded the experiences according to a weighted core experience index. And in this system, the depth of the NDE was measured according to the reported elements of the content of the NDE. The more elements were reported, the deeper the experience was and the higher the resulting score was. We found that 282 patients, 82%, had no recollection of the period of cardiac arrest, of the period of unconsciousness. But 62 patients, 18%, reported some recollection of the time of clinical death. And of these patients, 12% had a core experience with a score of 6 or higher. And 6% had a superficial NDE with only 1 or 2, maximum 3 elements. Now, which elements were reported? In our study, about 50% of the patients with an NDE reported awareness of being dead or had positive emotions. About 25% of the patients had an out-of-body experience. 30% reported moving through a tunnel. About 25% had communication with the light or observed colors. About 30% of the patients had an observation of a celestial landscape or had a meeting with deceased relatives. 13% experienced a life review, and 8% experienced a border. So in our study, all well-known elements were reported except a frightening NDE, but I know patients who had a frightening NDE as well, but they were not found in our study. Now, what might distinguish small percentage of patients who report an NDE from those who do not. We found to our surprise that neither the duration of cardiac arrest, 2 minutes or 8 minutes, nor the duration of unconsciousness, 5 minutes or 3 weeks in coma, nor the need for intubation in complicated CPR, nor induced cardiac arrest in electrophysiological stimulation studies, EPS, had any influence on the frequency of NDE. NS is non-significant. Neither could we find any relationship between the frequency of NDE and administered drugs, fear of death before the arrest, nor foreknowledge of NDE that you know that these experiences can happen, gender, religion, or education. So if people were Christian or atheist, it didn't matter at all. And then we additionally performed a longitudinal study with taped interviews of all late survivors of cardiac arrest with an NDE 2 and 8 years following the cardiac arrest, along with a matched control group of survivors of cardiac arrest who did not report an NDE. We wanted to know if the transformation, like changes in life insight, loss of the fear of death, and enhanced intuitive feelings, were only the result of an NDE, or that these changes also could have been caused by the cardiac arrest itself. It had never been studied before in a prospective study. We found a striking and statistical difference between people with or without an NDE. And only patients with an NDE showed this aforementioned typical transformation. The NDE turned out to be a life-changing experience. The second interviews after 8 years showed that in people with an NDE, the fear of death in particular had significantly decreased, while belief in an afterlife had significantly increased. It struck us that after 8 years, the people without NDE were also undergoing unmistakable processes of transformation. Nevertheless, the people with NDE continued to be clearly different. The newfound insight pertains what matters in everyday life: compassion and unconditional love for oneself. This is already difficult enough to accept oneself, to accept and have compassion and empathy towards others and toward nature. It also pertains to insight into connectedness. Everything and everybody is always connected. This is why some people describe the NDE as an experience of unity, an experience of oneness. We saw in them a greater interest in spirituality and questions about the purpose of life, as well as a greater acceptance of oneself and others. The conversations we had in our longitudinal study also revealed that people, often to their own amazement and confusion, had acquired enhanced intuitive feelings after an NDE, or, as many of them put it, they had acquired paranormal gifts. This enhanced intuition is based on interconnectedness with the non-local consciousness of others, and is independent of time, an inner knowing of future events or having prognostic dreams, and independent of distance, the sense of knowing about an incoming phone call and of pain, illness, or upcoming death of people, which usually proves to be accurate. The sudden occurrence of this enhanced intuition can be quite problematic, as people certainly have a very acute sense of others, which can be extremely intimidating. As someone told me, I couldn't even talk about it, or I would have been committed to an institution. Finally, it is quite remarkable to see a cardiac arrest lasting just a few minutes give rise to such a lifelong process of transformation. The depth of the experience, and above all, the panoramic life review and the encounter with the light appear to contribute to the intensity and the ineffability of these changes. Popular literature tends to concentrate on the positive nature of these changes. Yet many people struggle to accept and integrate their newfound insight, especially when faced with negative reactions from their partner with a divorce rate of more than 50%, because they say, I'm not married with the same person as before. And from family, friends, and healthcare practitioners. These are called interpersonal problems. And for obvious reasons, most people feel nostalgic about their NDE because of the unforgettable feelings of peace, acceptance, and love they encountered during the experience, and the feeling of being forced to return back into the body. So the NDE is also a traumatic event because there is at first hardly any acceptance by oneself, which makes the process of coming to terms with the experience very so difficult and painful, with years of strong feelings of depression, homesickness, and loneliness. So these are called the intrapersonal problems. And also personality traits of the person prior to the NDE, such as extroverted or introverted character, or positive or somber disposition, are important factors in this process. If dealing with an unexpected situation was always a challenge, coming to terms with an NDE is much harder. Cultural factors play a role too. Within Western culture, the experience is completely at odds with conventional wisdom. And the social support of family and friends is crucial. And a skeptical response of most health workers and relatives is a source of extreme frustration to NDEers. I have come across people who were unable to talk about the NDE and its consequences until more than 50 years after the event. For fear of rejection, they keep the NDE a lifelong secret. Several theories have been proposed to explain the NDE. However, in our first prospective study ever, it could not be shown that physiological, psychological, or pharmacological factors cause these experiences during cardiac arrest. With a purely physiological explanation, such as lack of oxygen in the brain, most patients who had been in clinical dead should report an NDE, because all patients in our study had been unconscious because of lack of oxygen in the brain resulting from their cardiac arrest. However, only 18% reported an NDE. And why only 18% reported an NDE after cardiac arrest is still a scientific mystery. Besides, it is a well-established fact that people without any lack of oxygen in the brain, like depression or meditation, can also experience an enhanced consciousness. Another theory holds that an NDE might be a changing state of consciousness, or the theory of continuity, in which memories, identity, and cognition with emotion function independently from the unconscious body and retain the possibility of extrasensory perception. Obviously, during NDE, enhanced consciousness is experienced independently from the normal body-linked waking consciousness. In four prospective studies with identical study design, our Dutch study, which is the only study with statistical analysis, one study from the USA and two studies from the UK, about the same percentage of NDE was found in a total of 562 patients who survived cardiac arrest. Bruce Grayson from the American study writes in his comment that no one physiological or psychological model by itself could explain the common features of an NDE. The paradoxical occurrence of heightened lucid awareness and logical thought process during a period of impaired cerebral perfusion raises particular perplexing questions for a current understanding of consciousness and its relation to brain function. A clear sensorium and complex perceptual processes during a period of apparent coma, apparent clinical death, challenge the concept that consciousness is localized exclusively in the brain. At Sampania and Peter Fennec write in that the data from several NDE studies suggest that the NDE arises during unconsciousness. And this is a surprising conclusion, because when the brain is so dysfunctional that the patient is deeply comatose, those cerebral structures which underpin subjective experience and memory must be severely impaired. Complex experiences such as reported to NDE should not arise or be retained in memory. Such patients would be expected to have no subjective experience at all. Appendix Sartori from the other British study concludes that according to mainstream science, it is quite impossible to find a scientific explanation for the NDE as long as we believe that consciousness is only a side effect of a functioning brain. The fact that people report lucid experiences in their consciousness when the brain activity has ceased is, in her view, difficult to reconcile with current medical opinion. So with lack of evidence for any other theories of NDE, the concept this far assumed, but never scientifically proven, that consciousness and memories are produced by large groups of neurons and are localized in the brain, should be discussed. How could a clear consciousness outside one's body be experienced at the moment that the brain no longer functions during a period of clinical death, even with a flatline EEG? Furthermore, even blind people from birth have described veridical perceptions during out-of-body experience at the time of their NDE. Scientific study of NDE pushes us to the limits of our medical and neurophysiological ideas about the range of human consciousness and its relation with brain function. Before I discuss in greater detail some neurophysiological aspects of normal brain function and during cardiac arrest, I would like to reconsider certain elements of the NDE. First, the out-of-body experience. In this experience, people have veridical perceptions from a position outside and above the lifeless body. NDEs have the feeling that they have apparently taken off their body like an old coat, and to their surprise, they appear to have retained their own identity with the possibility of perception, emotions, and a very clear consciousness. This out-of-body experience is scientifically important because doctors, nurses and relatives can verify the reported perceptions, and they can also corroborate the precise moment the NDE with OBE occurred during the period of CPR. In a recent review of 93 corroborated reports of potentially verifiable out-of-body experiences during NDE, Jen Holden has found that about 90% were complete accurate. 8% contained only some minor error, and only 2% was completely erroneous. And this proves that an OBE cannot be an hallucination, because this means experience and a perception that has no basis in reality, like in psychosis. Neither it can be a delusion, which is an incorrect assessment of a correct perception, nor is it an illusion, which means a misapprehensive or misleading image. Additionally, OBEs with veridical perception from a position out and above the body have never been induced, despite mentioning this in the medical literature, because only bodily illusions were induced by inhibition of special areas in the cortex, but no OBEs. A real OBE is clearly shown in this drawing of a 6-year-old girl who nearly drowned and was resuscitated in an American hospital. The drawing you see a happy girl up here, looking from above your own resuscitation. And this is the report of a nurse of the coronary care unit. During night shift, an ambulance brings in a 44-year-old, cyanotic, comatose man into the coronary care unit. He was found in coma about 30 minutes before in a meadow. When we go to intubate the patient, he turns out to have dentures in his mouth. I remove these upper dentures and put them into the crash cart. Only after about 1 hour and a half the patient has sufficient heart rhythm and blood pressure, but he is still ventilated and intubated, and he is still comatose. He is transferred to the intensive care unit to continue the necessary artificial respiration for 1 week, because he's another 1 week in coma. And after more than a week in coma, I do meet again with the patient, who is by now just back on the cardiac ward. The moment he sees me, he said, "Oh yes, you know where my dentures are." I'm very, very surprised. Then the patient elucidates, "Yes, you were there when I was brought into hospital, and you took my dentures out of my mouth and put them onto that cart. It had all these bottles on it, and there was this sliding drawer underneath, and there you put my teeth." I was especially amazed because I remember this happening when the man was in deep coma and in the process of CPR. It appeared that the man had seen himself lying in bed, that he had perceived from above how nurses and doctors had been busy with the CPR. He was also able to describe correctly and to detail the small room where he was resuscitated, as well as the appearances of those present, like myself. And then the holographic life review. During his life review, the subject feels the presence and renewed experience, not only of every act, but also of every thought from one's past life. And one realizes that all of it is an energy field which influences oneself as well as others. All that has been done and thought seems to be significant and stored, because one is connected with the memories, emotions, and consciousness of another person. You experience the consequences of your own thoughts, words, and actions to that other person at the very moment in the past when they occurred. Interconnectedness. Patients survey their whole life in one glance. Time and space do not seem to exist during such an experience. Non-locality. Quotation. "All of my life up till the present seems to be placed before me in a kind of panoramic, three-dimensional review. And each event seemed to be accompanied by a consciousness of good or evil, or with an insight into cause and effect. Not only did I perceive everything from my own viewpoint, but I also knew the thoughts of everyone involved in the event as if I had their thoughts within me. This meant that I perceived not only what I had done or thought, but even in what way it had influenced others, as if I saw things with all-seeing eyes. And so even your thoughts are apparently not wiped out." Consider the impact of this statement for a moment. Your thoughts are never wiped out. "And all the time during the review, the importance of love was emphasized. Looking back, I cannot say how long this life review and life insight lasted. It may have been long, for every subject came up, but at the same time, it seemed just a fraction of a second, because I perceived it all at the same moment. Time and distance seemed not to exist. I was in all places at the same time, and sometimes my attention was drawn to something and then I would be present there." And also a preview or flash forward can be experienced, in which both future images from personal life events as well as more general images from the future occur. People feel like they can see a part of the life that yet is to come. And again, it seems that if time and space do not exist during this preview, non-locality, the reports of the verifiable future events inevitably raises questions about free will and the extent to which people can determine their own future. Quote, "Then in a flash I saw the rest of my life. I could see a large part of my future life, taking care of my children, my wife's illness, everything that would happen to me, both in and out of the workplace. I could see it all. I foresaw my wife's death and my mother's passing. One day I wrote down all the things I saw back then. Over the years, I've been able to tick them all off. For instance, I saw my wife on her deathbed, wrapped in a white shawl, just like the one she was given by a friend of hers shortly before she died. And if deceased acquaintances or relatives are encountered in an otherworldly dimension, they are usually recognized by their appearance, and communication is possible through thought transfer. Thus, it is also possible to come into contact with the consciousness of deceased persons, interconnectedness. Quote, during my cardiac arrest, I had an extensive experience, and later I saw, apart from my deceased grandmother, a man who had looked at me lovingly, but whom I did not know. More than 10 years later, at my mother's deathbed, she confessed to me that I had been born out of an extramarital relationship, my father being a Jewish man who had been deported and killed during the Second World War. And my mother showed me his picture. The unknown man that I had seen more than 10 years before during my NE turned out to be my biological father. Some patients can describe how they returned into the body, mostly through the top of the head, after they had come to understand that it wasn't their time yet, or that they still had a task to fulfill. The conscious return into the body is experienced as something very oppressive. They regain consciousness in their body and realize that they are locked up again in their damaged body, meaning, again, all the pain and restriction of their disease. Quote, when I came in my body, it was dreadful, so dreadful. The experience had been so beautiful that I didn't want to come back. I wanted to stay there, and yet I came back. From that moment, it was a real struggle to live my life inside my body with all the limitations I experienced at the time. But later I realized that this experience was in fact a blessing, for now I know that the mind and body are separate, and that there's life after death. About all people who have experienced an NE lose their faith, their fear of death. Quote, it is outside my domain to discuss something that only can be proven by death. For me, however, this blessing experience was decisive in convincing me that consciousness lives on beyond the grave, and I know now for sure that body and mind are separated. Death was not death, but another form of life. So we have to come to the surprising conclusion that in our study during cardiac arrest, all these reported elements of an NDE were experienced during a transient functional loss of all functions of the cortex and of the brainstem with a flatline EEG. But how do we know that the EEG, the registration of the electrical activity of the cortex, is flat in those patients with cardiac arrest? And how can we study this? Through many studies with induced cardiac arrest in both human and animal models, cerebral function has been shown to be severely compromised during cardiac arrest, with complete cessation of cerebral flow, causing the clinical findings of the sudden loss of consciousness, the loss of breathing, apnea, the loss of all body reflexes, the function of the cortex, but also the loss of all brainstem reflexes like the gag reflex, the corneal reflex, and widened fixed and dilated pupils are clinical findings in those patients. And the electrical activity in the cerebral cortex, but also in the deeper structures of the brain in animals, has been shown to be absent after 10 to 20 seconds, an average of 15 seconds in a flatline EEG. And in an acute myocardial infarction, the duration of cardiac arrest in the coronary carrier is always longer than 20 seconds, usually at least 60 to 120 seconds in a well-organized coronary care unit. And in a hospital ward or an out-of-hospital arrest, it will take much, much longer. So all 562 survivors of cardiac arrest in the 4 prospective studies must have had a flatline EEG. Well, this conclusion is often called impossible and unscientific. The quite often proposed objection that the flatline EEG does not rule out any brain activity because it is mainly registration of the cerebral activity of the cerebral cortex, misses the mark. The issue is not whether there is any brain activity of any kind whatsoever, but whether there is the measurable brain activity of the specific form regarded by temporary neuroscience as the necessary condition of conscious experience, with visible activities in many neural centers, the so-called global neural workspace. And it has been proven that there is no such specific brain activity at all during cardiac arrest. So it is indeed a scientific challenge to discuss new hypotheses that could explain the possibility of to have clear and enhanced consciousness during a transient period of a non-functioning brain, with memories, with self-identity, with cognition, with emotion, with the possibility of perception out and above the lifeless body. To explain the reported interconnectedness with the consciousness of other persons and of diseased relatives. To explain the possibility to experience instantaneously and simultaneously non-locality, a review and a preview of someone's life in a dimension without our conventional body-linked concept of time and space, where all past, present, and future events exist, and even to explain the experience of the conscious return into the body. In my recently released book, Consciousness Beyond Life, which was a bestseller in the Netherlands with more than 100,000 copies sold within 1 year, I describe a concept in which our endless consciousness with declarative memories finds its origin in and is stored in a non-local space as wave fields of information. And the brain only serves as a relay station for parts of these wave fields of consciousness to be received into or as our waking consciousness. The function of the brain should so be compared with a transceiver, a transmitter-receiver or interface, exactly like the function of a computer. Different neuronal networks function as interface for different aspects of our consciousness. And the function of neuronal networks should be regarded as receivers and conveyors, not as retainers of consciousness and memories. In this concept, non-local consciousness is not rooted in the measurable domains of physics, our manifest world. However, the physical aspects of consciousness, which originates from the wave aspects of our consciousness through collapse of the wave function, objective reduction, can be measured by means of neuroimaging techniques like EEG, fMRI and PET scan. With this concept of non-local consciousness, all reported elements of NND during cardiac arrest could be explained. In trying to understand this concept of interaction between non-local consciousness and the material body, it seems appropriate to compare it with modern worldwide communication. There's a continuous exchange of objective information by means of electromagnetic fields for radio, TV, mobile telephone, or laptop computer. At this very moment, we are invaded by hundreds of thousands of telephone calls, by hundreds of television and radio programs, but we become only aware of these electromagnetic informative fields at the moment we use our mobile telephone or by switching on our radio, TV, or computer. And what we receive is neither inside the instrument nor in the components, but thanks to the receiver, the information from the electromagnetic fields becomes observable for our senses and hence perception occurs in our consciousness. Internet, with more than 1 billion websites, can be received at about the same moment in the USA, in Europe and Australia, and is obviously not located inside our laptop, nor is it produced by it. Now we can conclude that our waking consciousness, or ego, which we experience as our daily consciousness, is only a part of our whole or endless non-local consciousness, which also can be called universal consciousness, cosmic consciousness, or divine consciousness. This view of a non-local consciousness allows us to understand a wide variety of special states of consciousness, such as experienced during a critical medical situation, an NDE, during an acute situation of apparently unavoidable death in an imminent traffic accident or mountaineering accident and fear-death experience. And these experiences are also reported during meditation or deep relaxation, mystical, religious experiences or enlightenment experiences, during changing states of consciousness, during regression therapy, hypnosis, hypnagogia, the severe depression, isolation, shipwrecks or lost in the desert, or the use of drugs like LSD or DMT. These experiences also of enhanced consciousness may also occur during the terminal phase of life, the deathbed visions or end-of-life experiences, or at the moment of death of a close relative, a shared death experience of empathetic NDE. And the interconnectedness with non-local aspects of consciousness also explains apparitions at the moment of death, like being in contact with non-local aspects of consciousness of a dying person at a distance, a so-called perimortal experience, or in the period following death, having the inner feeling of being in contact with aspects of the consciousness of the deceased relative, the so-called post-mortal experience or after-death communication, ADC. The interconnectedness with these informative fields of non-local consciousness also explains enhanced intuition, like clairvoyance, clairaudience, prognostic dreams, and visions, the non-local information exchange. As I told before, following an NDE, most people, often to their own amazement and confusion, may experience such an enhanced intuitive sensibility, which means having access to non-local information that is not received by our senses or by our body. Presumably, the functional receiving capacity of the body is permanently enhanced following an NDE, which can be compared with a radio receiving not only channel 1, our own personal consciousness, but at the same time channel 2, 3, 4, and 5, the fields of consciousness of others. William James called this a lower personal threshold of consciousness. And this remote non-local communication or entanglement seems also to be demonstrated in remote viewing, non-local perception, and in the effect of consciousness on matter, like a non-local perturbation, as in neuroplasticity, where in fMRI, EEG, and PET scan studies, functional and structural changes in the brain are demonstrated following changes in consciousness, like in meditation, mindfulness training, or placebo effect. In placebo effect, like patients with depression, chronic pain, and a Parkinson's disease, where you see permanent changes the same as when they have real treatment, which obviously leaves us only to one conclusion: it's mind over matter. Since the publication of several prospective studies in NDE survivors of cardiac arrest with strikingly similar results and conclusions, the phenomenon of the NDE can no longer be scientifically ignored. It is an authentic experience which cannot be simply reduced to imagination, fear of death, hallucination, psychosis, the use of drugs or oxygen deficiency. And people appear to be permanently changed by an NDE during cardiac arrest of only some minutes duration. According to these studies, the current materialistic view of the relationship between the brain and consciousness held by most physicians, philosophers, and psychologists is too restricted for a proper understanding of this phenomenon. By making a scientific case for consciousness as a non-local and this ubiquitous phenomenon, this view can contribute to new ideas about the relationship between consciousness and the brain. Research on NDE and after-death communication as well questions the purely materialistic paradigm in science. And so it seems to be important for our scientific ideas about the mind-brain and mind-body relationship. It is also evident that it is important for our concepts of life and death because of the almost unavoidable conclusion that at the time of physical death, consciousness will continue to be experienced in another dimension in which all past, present, and future is enclosed. Quote, death is only the end of our physical aspects. I believe now that death, like birth, may be a mere passing from one state of consciousness into another. However, we should acknowledge that research on NDE cannot give us irrefutable scientific proof of this conclusion, because people with NDE did not quite die, but they all were very close to death and without a functioning brain. And as I have explained, it has indeed been scientifically proven that during NDE, enhanced consciousness was experienced independently of brain function. Quoting from a recent death announcement, all what you have falls into decay, but what you are lives on beyond time and space. So we have a body and we are conscious. Without a body, we still can have conscious experiences. Recently, someone with an NDE wrote me, I can live without my body, but apparently my body cannot live without me. Remarkably, in a recent representative social poll in Europe, about 55% of the population, more than 250 million people, believed in some kind of personal survival. And in the USA, this percentage is even higher. These surprising high figures are in sharp contrast with the opinion of the majority of Western scientists who systematically ignore or ridicule the possibility of personal survival after physical death. But based on the scientific research on NDE, one cannot avoid the conclusion that endless consciousness has and always will exist independently of the body. There is no beginning, nor will there ever be an end to our consciousness. Our enhanced consciousness resides not in our brain and is not limited to our brain, because our consciousness is non-local. And our brain has a facilitating function and not a producing function to experience consciousness. Obviously, more knowledge about the results of NDE research and about the possible continuity of consciousness after physical death could have a significant impact on the practice of medicine, because it informs ideas about the treatment of patients in coma or in the final stages of terminal illness. Our approach to these medical and ethical problems is shaped in part by our personal belief in the possible continuity of consciousness after physical death, or in contrast, by our personal conviction that death is the end of everything. These views are usually based on religious beliefs or the lack thereof. Research in the USA has shown that doctors' religious beliefs play a significant role in the practical approach to these kind of issues. This obvious results in differences in medical practice regarding procedures such as birth control, abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, removal of organs for transplantation from somebody in the dying process with a beating heart in a warm body, but with the diagnosis of brain death. The issue do not resuscitate forms or initiating or ending life prolonging treatment. But NDE research is not only of great practical significance to healthcare practitioners, but also to dying patients and their family. They ought to be aware of the extraordinary conscious experience that may occur during a period of clinical death or coma, around the deathbed and the dying, the end-of-life experiences, or even after death, the after-death communication. By accommodating rather than judging these experiences, patients and their families are given a chance to integrate them into the rest of their lives. To provide NDEers with better help and support than they currently receive, all healthcare workers and family members ought to consider the possibility of an NDE after a patient suffers a life-threatening crisis like cardiac arrest or coma. And in the event of an NDE, the doctor or therapist should not reject the experience as a pathological or anomalous incident, but regard it as an existential crisis with all the disorientation and psychological problems such a crisis entails. Talking about post-NDE views on death and dying and about the experience of the continuity of consciousness, that turned out not to be dead, can also be extremely reassuring for patients, their family and nursing staff in hospices and hospital wards where patients receive terminal and palliative care. Several researchers have shown that talking about the content and consequences of an NDE helps to reduce the fear of death among terminal patients. In the past, a lot has been written about life and death, and also about special states of enhanced or non-local consciousness. But surprisingly, many people nowadays still have never heard about an NDE. And this is why they still believe that death is the end of our existence and the end of our consciousness. People are afraid that with death, everything comes to an end. And as a young doctor, this was also my concept about death. I was raised in an academic world where I was taught that for every observation was a reductionist, materialistic, so-called scientific explanation. It was obvious, which made it impossible to accept that a clear consciousness could be experienced during a period of cardiac arrest or coma, or even briefly before, during, or after death. And until 25 years ago, I had always accepted this view without questioning. But today, science for me means asking questions with an open mind. Science should be the search for explaining new mysteries rather than to stick with old concepts. And he who has never changed his mind because he could not accept new concepts has rarely learned anything. I can assure you that I have learned quite a lot because of all those patients who were willing to share their NDE with me, and they have greatly changed my views on the meaning of life and death. People with an NDE have been my greatest teachers. My current view is now, as I have already stated before, there are good reasons to assume that our consciousness does not always coincide with the functioning of our brain. And hence consciousness can sometimes be experienced separately from the body. And I have come to the inevitable conclusion that most likely the brain must have had a facilitating and not a producing function to experience consciousness. I'm aware that this concept can be little more than a stimulus for further study and debate. And above all, we should question a purely materialistic paradigm in science. And William James should have said, "First, you know, a new theory is attacked as absurd. Then it is admitted to be true, but obvious and insignificant. And finally, it seems to be so important that its adversaries claim that they themselves discovered it." I believe and hope that in the near future, modern science will include empirical research and unusual subjective experience that may occur in our consciousness, that we will accept non-local concepts to understand how we are interconnected with each other, with our endangered planet. We desperately need a real paradigm shift in science. I realize now that everything originates from consciousness. And I understand that people create their own subjective reality based on their consciousness and create the intention one lives his life. We should recognize that our view of the world is wrong, because we do not realize that the world, as we see it, only derives its subjective reality from our consciousness, because it is our consciousness that is determining how we perceive this world. When we are in love, the world around us is beautiful. When we are depressed, our world is like hell. When we are frightened, made terrified by politicians and the press, our world will be full of terror. "The mind in its own place and in itself can make heaven or hell," wrote John Milton even in 1667 in his poem Paradigm Lost. Regarding what we can learn from people who are willing to share the NDE with others, I would like to quote Doug Hammarskjöld: "Our ideas about death define how we live our life. because as long as we believe that death is the end of everything we are, we will give our energy toward the temporary and material aspects of our life. And our short-sightedness and sometimes willful ignorance, we forget to reflect on the future of our planet, where our children, our grandchildren will have to live and survive. We forget about the sustainability as we are now destroying and exhausting systematically our planet just because we are living in a competitive and materialistic society. We should stop thinking and acting as if we are better than others, because this will always be at the expense of children and other weak and delicate creatures around the world. We should realize that the harm we cause to each other and to nature ultimately is harming ourselves, because we as humans are not only intensely interconnected and tangled with each other, but also with animals and plants living on our endangered Earth. I hope that in the near future we will accept non-local aspects to understand how we are and always will be interconnected with each other, also after physical death. That we have to change our personal consciousness, not only to change the way we live, but also to change the way we want to treat, honor, and respect our patients. As a woman with an NDE wrote to me, when the power of love becomes stronger than our love for power, our world will change. It will require a huge change in consciousness indeed. We should all feel the responsibility for this change. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
A most wonderful lecture, starting with science and the NDE and going out to a world view. I'm really impressed with your talk, Pim.
Thank you.
I can understand why you have sold 100,000 books in Holland, and it's going to be many more elsewhere. There's some of Pim's papers on the desk. What is really encouraging and exciting for me is to see that at long last, the ideas and concepts that we've all been working with, those of us in the ND field, are now coming to fruition. And when you hear your first NDE, you think, yeah, it's amazing. And if it's true, it'll change the world. And Pim, in fact, is showing us in exactly what ways it will change the world, most particularly ethically, because you cannot behave as you're behaving if you recognize that every thought that you've thought is, in fact, there, and you will have to face it later on. It changes everything. Pim, again, thank you so much for your talk. Now, what we're going to do is that we'll be burning questions for Pim alone, and he will have until coffee time, which is 1:45, so that's just over 15 minutes, about 20 minutes. Then we'll have coffee, and then we have a wonderful time. David and I will give some thoughts on the NDE, and then really it's for the network to see what they think of these very, very cutting-edge ideas, which will take us up to lunch. So it's one and a half hours for us to really understand the significance of what Pim has been saying. So, who is going to ask Pim the first question?
Can you wait for a microphone?
Yes, can you wait for a microphone?
Can we start with a question for me to the audience? I would like to know, how many of you have ever met a person with an NDE? That's quite a lot. How many of you had an experience of NDE themselves? That's also wonderful, thank you. And how many of you had the inner knowing or feeling to be in contact with the consciousness of the deceased relatives? So this is a very special audience, thank you very much.
but Tim, we know it's a special audience. Okay, you were first. Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Anybody? Right, well, that was fascinating. What intrigues me is all these theories relate to humans. I want to know, what do you think about animal consciousness, from the great apes down to mice or anything else? Do they also live on afterwards? I mean, my cat assures me he's just as conscious as I am. Thanks for asking. And, you know, I just feel, well, if different brains have different consciousnesses, is it still the same principle that it is non-local and their brain actually receives rather than creates consciousness?
Yeah. Well, my concept is that consciousness is fundamental in the universe, which means that everything has a kind of subjectivity, which is not the same as human consciousness. I think all of those of you who have an animal know that it is conscious. And animals have more a group consciousness than a personal consciousness, but they have both. When you see a flock of birds playing around, they have interconnectedness without any time. They're just always connected. There have been reports of people, especially for children who had an adaptability, who saw their pet who died before. We also know that people who have an after-death communication, so they fear the presence or see the presence of someone who died, that the dog or cat become also very uneasy or well. So they feel the presence as well. So I believe that there's also everything in our planet has a kind of subjectivity, which is not the same as human consciousness. I think they cannot tell me, but I think so, yes.
Well, they do actually tell you, Kevin. They tell you with their brain waves.
Exactly.
And the dreaming period is right throughout the animal kingdom and the bird kingdom. Yeah. So basically we all dream. Okay.
I have another story. We had a meeting with a Dutch Irons, with a lot of people with NDE, and also some we were 50 people just to talk about the future of our organization. And it was around home, and we had a dog. And when someone in the center of the circle was talking for 5 minutes, when there was an NDE, the dog went beside the person, when it was someone who was talking about from rationality, he went away. He was always came close to the people with an NDE. He felt it.
Okay, Horace.
Pim, your false teeth example is of great importance.
Yes.
If you switch an electric current off, it creates a magnetic field. So the possibility was that if you switch physical consciousness off or on, it might have created an NDE experience in a logically analogous way. But that false teeth example shows that that is not the case.
Exactly.
And my own experiences of post-mortem communication, both with relatives and non-relatives, have been such, and I can't go into any details, or it would take half an hour at least, that these experiences, similarly, are not like the Faraday experiment, you turn something off and you create something. But rather that they are related to post-mortem continuation of consciousness and communication.
Exactly.
And this is, for a very sceptical scientist indeed, very surprising and enlightening.
And even when you put persons in a Faraday cage where there's no electromagnetic exchange, they still have the same communication.
Oh, yes.
So it's not an electromagnetic.
Exactly. It's not electromagnetism.
Yeah. Thank you.
But I've never had a false positive.
Yes, I'd like to ask you about OBEs in cases of clinical death. First, I'd like to make an observation about when you talk about very young children having out-of-body experiences and veridical perceptions, that if you take Piaget's idea of intellectual development and their egocentric, that unless they were in that position, they wouldn't be able to make those observations. That's just an observation. But I think the problem I have with this idea, in cases of clinical death, that non-local consciousness becomes operable, is what about, how would you explain, let's say, third-person reports. Third-person reports of people leaving their bodies on their deathbeds, yes. Where people see something leaving the body and then forming a second body. Because your scheme seems to imply there's just one body. It's a sort of hiding monism.
No, I don't talk about bodies. I talk about consciousness. And in my idea, there are many aspects or levels of consciousness. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not one level. And the main level is the most important, is the non-local aspect where everything is connected, everything is one. The people experience the oneness of everything. And it's always there. But we hardly ever experience in non-local consciousness. We can experience in critical situations, we can experience in depression, we can experience this in meditation, which is always there. It's also the reason that we can conclude that it's not a physiological explanation why this occurs. It's just the access to this non-local consciousness, which is possible also for children. And so I don't talk about this, and you got into theories like astral body and a mental body and etc. I want to evade it because I don't never talk about soul and spirit and mind because everybody has his own concepts about it. So I just talk about consciousness, and there are several levels of consciousness, the like Jung with the unconscious aspect or the common unconscious. It's all an aspect of this non-local consciousness, and we can discuss a lot of these layers, but at last there's always one connection with everything. So there are a lot of theories done with the anthroposophy, the theoposophy, etc. So I don't want to go into that because you just got into strict concepts and I want to evade it. But what about the objectivity of perceiving when people die is very impressive. Not only the shared death experience that you can you will be taken with the people, with a loved person who dies, with his dying experience. So people are there, very sane, but connected with it, and then you have the total experience. They even sometimes experience their life review of the people who dies, and seeing aspects. So it's always the same. And also they see sometimes a light bulb going out of the skull. I even had an email of a woman who said, in the middle of the night in my bedroom, there was a light bulb going into the bed. I didn't know what it was. And 9 months later, she gave birth to a child. And the next time, she had the same experience. It was 1.5 hours after sexual intercourse. It's the moment that the egg cell and sperm came together. There was a light bulb coming to her. And she had it a full pregnancy. She had the same experience. So it's not only getting out, but also coming in. But it's very extraordinary that you can perceive it. It's not seeing, it's perceiving, I will say.
While we're on that subject, I did a small census of the network about when the women knew that life had come into the body. Pim is giving us 1.5 hours there, and that was about right for the group that I had, certainly within 24 hours. How many of you women who have had children knew at the moment that life came into you? Just one.
No,
two.
Three.
Two.
Oh, three. Three. Yeah. As a father. As a father, I believe I know the moment when my daughter was fertilized.
Okay, well, this goes nicely to non-local.
Yes,
Okay, you have
microphone. Thank you for wonderful both research and presentation. It was really wonderful.
Thank you.
My question, you mentioned about level of consciousness, and I believe that is, at the end of the day, there is one universal consciousness. And how much of these people who reported the NDE have also feeling there is one consciousness, that they are part of it? Or there is still separation between them and, like, universal consciousness?
When you're in your body, there's a dualism. There's an object and subject. When you have this kind of experience, there's only subject left. Everything is one. Everything is connected. There's no object anymore. And that's the experience where you are in the light, in this non-local consciousness experience. Then everything is connected instantaneously. This is unity. There's no object anymore.
Clement Jewett, I'm here.
Yeah.
The voice comes from elsewhere.
Yes. We are connected now.
On the matter of re-entry through the head, I was reminded of something I learnt recently about the Quero people on the high altiplano in South America, who are a collection of communities in Peru who are held to be descendants of the Incas. And they have an energy system of relating to the world, which has a number of points in common with systems from elsewhere, such as there are equivalents to the chakra system, for example. But they also have an equivalent to what we know as the aura from elsewhere, yeah, which they call, or translate into English, as the bubble.
The bubble.
And they, one of the exercises is that you open your bubble at the top to let in energy from the cosmos. Just a comment.
It's also the Tibetan Buddhism have the same.
Yes.
They have the same. Also, when they're dying, to open the
died and wrote in and had the shapes leaving the body. Leaving from the head was quite common, leaving from the chest was quite common, and some people left from their feet.
Exactly.
Now, what the differences are and why they chose those methods, I don't know.
Thank you very much. Once again, it was brilliant. Thank you so much for that. You've left me puzzled.
What?
You've left me puzzled.
Okay.
The puzzle. Yes, I know. The puzzlement comes from this. You refer a lot to William James. You refer to non-local consciousness. For many philosophers of science and development, they would argue that this is evidence of afterlife. This would evidence of building the, what do they call it, the body of light, which leads, yep, to reincarnation and future. And you seem to quite explicitly deny this, and I can't understand why.
I don't deny it. I never talk about life after death or afterlife because life is a physical aspect. Life is about cell growth, cell division, about metabolism, about interaction with the surrounding environment. This is life. It's a physical aspect. And when the body is dead, the physical aspects are dead, but consciousness is still there. So consciousness is independent of physical life. So I never talk about life after death or afterlife. I talk about continuity of consciousness on purpose.
My question is that you showed, or you talked about a study, four different studies, which showed that 20% of people, I think, had some kind of NDE.
Yeah.
My question is, what do you think happens to the other 80%?
Yes. Well, first of all, I told you that it's still a mystery. We cannot explain it by science. One of the thoughts was, assumption was that they forgot it, the experience. And that's the reason we did the longitudinal study with the transformation. Because we know that children under the age of 4, they don't remember the NDE, the content where they all have the transformation. They have an NDE at birth or as a very young child or baby. You can have an NDE. Sometimes you remember, but mostly not. But they all have the transformation. So the transformation is, for me, the objective aspect of the subjective experience. That's what the reason we did the longitudinal study. And the people without an NDE did not have the classical transformation. So I don't believe that they forgot it, but I think they did not have the experience. So there's no scientific explanation. There can be an explanation, which is not scientifically. Maybe we are bound to our body, or when we identify our body with ourselves, with our consciousness, then perhaps it's very hard to get rid of the body. It takes time. And I think that only 20% were able to be out of the body within the 5 to 10 seconds of the cardiac arrest. And I think when you die, when you need 30 minutes or 2 or 3 hours to get out, you will have the same experience, but it will take longer. But this is not a scientific explanation. It could be a possibility.
Okay, well, we'll have to end it.
end there. Remember, we've got 1 hour, 1.5 hours later to ask questions. The interesting Pim that said there that it's been examined scientifically, I don't think it has, because one of the things we do know is that after cardiac arrest, you have massive brain damage. And if you look at the studies where they've done cognitive tests on people who've had a cardiac arrest, they do have brain damage. Not all of them, but most of them. And some of them it's severe. So think of that 90% of people who didn't have a cardiac arrest as having brain damage. Now you ask a totally different question. You ask the question, is their memory functioning in such a way that they could, in fact, recall these experiences if they had?
Well, that's an aspect of our study as well. The people who had brain damage, who had after a period of coma, with their short memory distorted, they have significant less NDE reported. So you need a good functioning brain to report an NDE.
Absolutely. And so there is much more scientific work to be done on this. So we have to leave it there for the moment. Pim, again, thank you so much for a wonderful talk. And I'd like you all to thank Pim once more.